From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Happy to have you here all over the Michigan Talk Network, all over the world via our website, wildmichiganradio.com. And you can pick us up there, pick up the podcast, and see all the changes that will be taking place. We're working on them. So everything looks the same, but it's going to be different here in the next couple of weeks. We're going to have all a new look and everything. We're upgrading everything because you can't, you can't have things just looking like that. Plain and simple. This is the technology is there, and I'm taking advantage of it, and I'm going to be really delving myself into this in the next week. So thanks to everybody that's been helping out with that. Our good friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street, 127 in Mason. Find them online, notjustguns.com, and of course, Conquest Sense. I thought Doug Roberts and Karen Roberts were off in Las Vegas. They decided, you know what, we're taking the time off, but we do have Doug Roberts here with us right now. Doug, welcome back. You survived barely the ATA and said, you know, why put myself through that crap again and SHOT Show?
I'll tell you, the ATA, we had a great show. Attendance was way down, but we were still very busy, so we felt blessed. But yeah, I got home from that, and boy, the flu hit me, and that was a rough one. And it was like, why am I going to go out and get amongst 10,000 other people in
right,
Vegas,
you know,
when I don't have to, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, knock on wood, I've been very fortunate to have dodged all forms of viri that are out there. I don't know. Is that a word? I just made that up as I go. But you know, it's just one of those things. It's just part of being human. You know what I mean? I mean, these things morph for us and we can handle it. That's what we're for. But you know, we have also advantages. We have these things called opposable thumbs and rational thought that allow us to build houses and stay warm, for the most part. And, but animals do not have that. They have the eat, sleep, and reproduce, and the flea instincts, you know, within them. And I called you earlier or last week because, you know, we've had what appeared to be, as far as snow is concerned, a mild winter, but that's what we see from the outside looking in. But that's really not the case when it comes to deer.
Well, Duran, you're right. You know, and if you look at what we've had this winter, the more snowfall that we get, the deer actually have the ability to dig down and get down to the ground. And even though we think that it's kind of froze, they're able to actually pull some of that ground heat out of the ground. And the snow around them actually insulates their body. And it allows the wind to kind of go over the top, and they can literally stay, you know, a few degrees warmer, which makes a world of difference to the deer during the winter. But we haven't, for the most part, had that snow in most of Michigan and a lot of areas across the country. But we've had the super cold temperatures with the even colder wind chills, which just chews up that body fat that they were able to hopefully get, you know, during the fall and going into winter. If they didn't, they're probably not going to survive this winter because it's literally the coldest winter we've had since 2014, which that one was bitter cold and very long as well. So, but again, look back at what we did in the fall. It was amazing. You know, nature is perfect. A lot of the farmers didn't get their crops off early. So they were having corn, soybeans, you know, they were in the hay fields and they were building those fat stores up like crazy on themselves, knowing this kind of winter was coming. So nature still takes care of itself for the most part. And only the weak are going to be eliminated. The strong will survive and we'll still have a good deer herd.
Speaking with Doug Roberts here on Wild Michigan, Doug, first week of November, my dad went out, and which this is so cool. My dad's going to be 80 next year, and he's like in better shape than I am. And he goes out, shoots this nice big doe, drags it back himself, hangs it up, and all this other stuff. And he had it skinned out, and I'm looking, and the fat on that thing was so thick and so abundant that early in the year. I looked, I'm like, we're in for it. I knew we were going to have some trouble as far as it being cold this year.
Yeah, it's, you know, how do they know that? How do they sense that? You know, that's a connection with nature and what they have to do to survive, way beyond a human mentality that we have. And but that's what they were doing. But again, a lot of the crops were there for them to get that. The acorn, you know, was a decent mass crop this year. But around here, the cornfields and the soybean fields stayed up literally probably a month longer than normal, and it gave them the ability to build that fat store up for the weather we're having right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know what? If they could speak, they'd put a few meteorologists out of business, I'm thinking.
Absolutely. They're not guessing. They absolutely know. Now, the downside with having temperatures and weather like we have, you've got a lot of the water areas have all froze solid, and we all know we all need water, and so do deer. And with the dry temperatures, we have a drier snow. So it takes more snow for them to eat to get the moisture content in. But again, a deer's system goes into what we call a semi-dormant state. It slows itself down. It doesn't move as much. It finds a food source and it stays there and eats off that food source. So it consumes less, but it burns less energy. So it takes less moisture in order to make it through a day. So it's just amazing how it works. But if you can keep water areas open for the deer, you will find they will absolutely use them, because they definitely would prefer fresh water, open water.
Absolutely. Doug Robbins is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Doug, you said, I mean, you're around a deer you raise, whitetails, and you said you were out checking the property, and there was one deer that you thought had succumbed to the temperatures, but it was like, it was so cold, just kind of laying there dormant almost.
Yeah, it was interesting. We all come in the morning. This was just, you know, last week. And I mean, it was way below zero, wind chill. And we're out in the middle of the field, there's this deer laying there dead. And we're like, what in the world? It was a buck fawn, a good sized buck fawn. And so I said, well, guys, get on the four wheeler, go out, pick it up, and we'll try to figure out what happened. Well, they got probably 30 yards from it, and all of a sudden his head popped up. And the whole, I mean, it was just covered in frost, just frozen. And his head popped up. It looked at him like, are you seriously going to make me move right now? I am tucked in here. This is my most comfortable spot. And they just backed off. But it again, taught me a good lesson that in these type of temperatures, they find these little divots in the ground. They lay down in them. The wind goes over the top, and they just wait this weather out. And even the young fawns, and that was just a buck fawn, born this past spring. So what is he, 6 months old?
Yeah,
he's not got that it old. He's got it figured out.
Man, just amazing. Now, their hair is kind of hollow, and that helps them retain whatever heat they can, correct?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah,
their winter hair is very hollow, and so, we'll bring deer in all year long, and we're collecting, and so it's interesting. So we really get to study the hair and the coarseness and the fineness, and it gets real coarse and hollow, and what that does is kind of like a thermal pane window that you would have in your house. It kind of gives that dead space so that cold doesn't get down into their body and into the skin. It's amazing how it works, but it works extremely well.
It's so cool, man. That's why, we bring you on to talk about these things, because, it's not just about hunting and this and that. There's so much more that goes into what we do, and that's what we try and convey here on the show, is to bring these questions, these things that we don't normally think about, to the forefront. Doug Roberts is our guest from Conquest Sense. We're going to speak more with him in a couple of seconds, so stick around. More coming your way. Again, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and, of course, our website, wildmichiganradio.com.
to everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors. Thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. And it's been a winter, but you know what? We're looking at warmer temperatures coming up next week, which is great because I'm excited about that. I'm actually going to probably get out and do some ice fishing without a shelter this next week, just to get out and say I've done it so far this year. But last night, as my wife and I were out driving just south of Charlotte, of course, that 69 corridor between Charlotte and 94, always lots of deer. Always, you know, a lot of car deer accidents and whatnot. But Doug Roberts is our guest here from Conquest Sense. And Doug, I noticed, I pointed off to my wife a field off to the west as we were driving that had, and I'm not kidding, about 50 to 60 deer in there. And I said, we've got a problem because about a quarter of that in a square mile is okay. That right there is an issue.
It can be because, you know, we all know deer yard up or they herd up and they really bring family groups together. And here's why they do it. There's limited food sources and there's more limited areas of wintering with higher thermals. One of the things Michigan is really lacking across the entire state is winter habitat for the deer to survive and have the, you know, again, you change the temperature just 2 or 3 degrees for them, and it's a world of difference on how many of them survive the winter. And then you add in the food source. So what you're seeing is you've got, for some reason, there's a good food source there, and there's probably a very good wintering ground there. But you get that many deer in one place, and what happens? They eat it out right away. Mm-hmm. Now we got to go find food source someplace else that doesn't have the proper wintering habitat. And now we start to really eat our fat reserves up. They start to disappear and they really struggle as we get to the end of the winter. It can be a complicated situation. I mean, it's nice to see all of that, but yeah, that's way too many deer for that kind of an area. But I will tell you, the ones that survive, they will spread out come spring and find new feed grounds again. But hunters have to understand the best thing they could do for the deer herd in Michigan right now is create positive habitat for wintering the deer. Cedars and pines and things that create warmer thermals is a huge situation right now.
You know, and that's kind of the answer I was looking for. I know that, I mean, look, there's a huge competition for food source when you have that many deer together, yep. You know, and so many other factors that are involved. Because I was quite shocked because I saw like 10 at first, and then we went another 100 yards on the road, and I was just shocked to see that many deer. Yeah. And like, we can only hunt so much to control the population, and what I want to get out to the people that are up in arms about these communities that are hiring sharpshooters to come in and cull some of these deer is there's so much more beyond, hey, they're cute, you know, and look, we have to get past that because for their health and our safety, it needs to be done. I mean, right. It's just, you just have to.
It does, and that's, you hit the major problem right on the head. None of us have ever met a single person, whether you're 1 year old or 101, that doesn't love the white-tailed deer. So no matter what side of the fence or if you're on a fence, if you're an anti-hunter, a hunter, a nature lover, whatever, we all love deer. And so we all have our emotional opinion about what should be done with them. But you can't have that many deer, especially in suburban areas and in city areas, and protect them and not expect a couple things to happen. One, your car deer accidents are going to go way up. They can damage a lot of physical property in your yards and homes and gardens. And a lot of people say, well, live with it. But the point being is they also, the herd becomes unhealthy because it becomes unsustainable, and it can actually get inbred or line bred too much. And so culling processes, whatever they are actually a very healthy process for all deer herds and all deer families. You and I have talked about the deer families, like where you hunt, I'm sure there's two or three deer families. They mm-hmm. breed within their family, and then they crossbreed out, and that locks in those genetic traits. They can be good or bad traits, but they lock them in. Again, in these suburban areas, it creates more of a problem because these deer don't get culled out and rotated, and too many of them happen, and now the genetic pool gets very weak, and they can succumb to, you know, different giardia, coccidia, which is naturally in the ground. There's so many other things that they can catch and just take the whole herd down then, and then you have nothing.
So, yeah, it can be an issue. And I know we've got a couple acres of my house that butt up to 12 acres behind us. But, you know, we live in town. You know, and mm-hmm. this is so funny, Doug. I mean, I know we have deer around, and I know we have some really nice bucks around. But when I got up from the couch just to casually look out at the window, there's five does staring at my TV. You know, I thought was kind of funny because normally we see them way out to the back, but I know it's been cold, and I know they're kind of roving around looking for other food sources, and they're just kind of staring at whatever I was watching, you know, like Casino or something like that.
Well, and that's true. And the other thing people are calling, and I'm getting calls and asking, you know, why are we seeing deer all times of the day? Well, because with these kind of temperatures and these wind chills, they're out eating at all times of the day because a lot of them have got to keep that fat store up, or if they've lost it, the only way to stay alive is to keep eating and have an energy intake. Not a protein intake, but an energy intake. And let me tell you, that's going to run out in a lot of places before we get out of this mess. So this little warm-up you just talked about coming up this week is going to be a huge bonus for a lot of white-tailed deer across this state.
Yeah, I know. I know the longer we go with winter, the harder it is on them. But yeah, we're going to have a nice warm-up with some rain and some warmer temperatures, and it's going to get some fresh water flowing for them, and that's going to be fantastic. Man, I tell you, we never have the same conversation. You know, I mean, and that's out of 15 years of doing this is pretty amazing. But like you say, you learn every day you go out to work, you know, which is with 100 plus deer or 200. How many deer do you have?
We usually run around 350. We're down right now to a couple hundred just because we're restocking a ranch. And so we sold about 100 deer this past year, so we're down. But and it's kind of nice because feed prices right now are way up. So
yeah,
it's tough feeding that many mouths, and it's 24/7. You know, they have free choice. So we go through about 18 tons of feed every 3 to 4 weeks.
Wow.
You know, right now you're running at about $725 a ton. So do the math.
Right on. Well, you can find him, find out what he's doing himself, conquestsense.com. Doug Roberts, the deer professor, thank you so much for joining us here on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an hour to time in a state.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. Another weekend. Lots of ice out there. This has been probably one of the better years for ice fishing that we've seen in a while. Tip up town, I'm sure. I didn't even pay attention to when that was going on. With everything going on around us, it's been so weird and kind of hard to keep up with things. But I do know of somebody that was at Houghton Lake for his Ice Fishing Vacation School, and we've got him on the phone right now, Mark Martin, pro angler, Mr. Walleye. How are you, sir?
Fantastic, Duran. Fantastic. You know, as long as I can go and teach people how to catch fish on the ice, and it's really a real winner, and I don't have to worry about is it going to be here today or gone tomorrow, I'm good. Or great. Fantastic.
Now, you're on your way up to Mullet Lake, but you were recently at Houghton Lake for your vacation yep. school. And you know what? You've got people that are, you know, are pretty well versed in ice fishing, but I saw you had somebody that never gone out ice fishing before.
Yeah, never. And I love them people because they don't have any perceived notions. They soak up everything. You tell them, like, gospel, which it is, you know, because we've made the mistake. You know, you get people that come into the schools that, you know, some think they're going to show you how to catch fish, which, hey, that's fine, but I think you spent $475 to learn how we catch fish, you know. And so this guy, he just, you know, just was, yeah, okay, and he caught fish, you know, because he just did mimicked everything the pros told him. And he did very, very well, and it got most improved, too. So there you go.
I saw that, yeah, because when you go from zero to catching fish consistently because of what you're taught, it not only makes it more enjoyable, but it's going to make every other opportunity you get to go out ice fishing more enjoyable as well.
Well, yeah, right, and now they got the tools, they got the mindset. They know how to use the methods and put them in place when they're supposed to. And they're the kind of people that are going to end up being better than we are because they're going to expound upon our abilities to teach them because sometimes we even have a relapse, us pros, and catch ourselves doing something we shouldn't do, where this guy, he don't know anything about that, so he'll never relapse. He relapses, he'll relapse into some other thing we taught him how to do right.
Now, talk about Houghton Lake a little bit, because, look, I know it covers a lot of area, but there's really not a lot of depth in that lake.
No, it's, you know, it's really, you know, I mean, at the east end, it goes down into 20-some, 30 feet of water. And that's where we have caught our biggest walleye down there. But the majority of the walleyes have been scattered around the old weed bed. You know, when ice starts to form or before it does, people should get out and mark the edges of the weed beds because a lot of weed beds, you know, from one year to the next, if you don't check them before the ice comes and you're going to fish them again, they might not be there because the wind will rip those weeds out of there and you're going to go, where are they?
Right.
And it's happened to me. So we go out prior to it, find all the weed edges because that's right where when you begin, you know, begin the year and first ice, and that's where we like to start, is in the pockets of weeds, on the edge of the weeds, especially there because there's no really perceived drop-offs. It's just a bowl shaped, and so we're concentrating on the weed edges, you know, the points, the inside turns, the pockets in the weeds, and teaching people how to attract the fish to them. And that's really the key, is teaching these guys how to get the fish to, you know, they're in the weeds, they can't see that far themselves. So you got to make sure they hear you over there, sitting there on the ice. And if they can hear your lure banging around on the bottom, they're going to come and investigate. And we teach them how to do that and how to, you know, once they see them coming in, we teach them what to do from there.
Mark Martin is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Mark, this year we got ice kind of, you know, a little faster than we have in years past, and the thing that was really good about the ice for not only above but below was the fact that we didn't have a lot of snow covering the ice.
great. And that's what's added to it. Now we're starting to get snow, so that's kind of good for the, you know, camouflage from above so they can't see you messing around up there above them. But the other thing is good for snow liquid cool snowmobiles so that they get the snow up on their tunnels and tracks so they don't overheat them.
Yeah, it's, I mean, because look, when you're fishing larger bodies of water like that, like Houghton Lake and like, you know, like Mullet, where you're going to be, transportation is definitely definitely needed instead of trying to walk out.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. And we always explain to the people, you know, they probably should have scratchers on their snow machines to throw. If there isn't much snow or any, it chisels it up and scratches it up and throws little ice chunks up there. And it's just, you know, they're not very expensive, but they can save an expensive piece of work that you can have it melt those high facts together and now you're stranded.
Yeah, that can be a big issue, especially when you're, you know, as far out or across as Houghton Lake is. I mean, look, I've been told, again, you know, like you said, with the east end of the lake having the deeper parts, I've been told that at particular times of the year, you could find your way to walk across that lake. Now, I don't know how true that is, but I do know how shallow that lake and how dangerous it can be in open water with a storm coming in.
Oh, no doubt about that, Durant. Open water, that water can churn right up, and you'll be amazed how big those waves get out there. I've been out there. So, but yeah, you know, in the wintertime, I'll tell you what, it was a whiteout when we were fishing. I could not see from one group to the other. I knew where they were only from GPS locations, and I'd head there, and we just, you know, eventually I would see them. You know, they weren't like visible from one group to another. So you gotta, you know, have a GPS, even though everybody's, you know, even the GPS manufacturer goes, don't use this to depend on for your life. Well, what the heck are you going to depend on? A compass. But this thing at least tell, you know, you got, you know, a destination where they are and how far away. You know, compass shows you the direction, but how far are they, you know?
Right, exactly. And nobody's staking any lines in from one shack to the next.
No. And we couldn't see 50 yards sometimes.
That's crazy.
That's a real whiteout. So, there's, you know, we teach people how to manage that stuff.
Mark Martin is our guest here. We're talking with Mark. Mark is on his way up to Mullet Lake for another fishing vacation school. And Mark, in the next segment, if you want to hang on real quick, we're going to go to a quick break. But we're going to find out what's coming up for the Mullet Lake School here. You can find him online, markmartins.net. And we'll talk more here with Mark on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hey, Michiganiacs, this is your blood brother Ted Nugent celebrating the almighty Michigan Spirit of the Wild with my blood brother Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Go Wild!
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. They've been doing some great classes with Chris Kreiner from Great Outdoor Pursuits. He's been over there teaching some of their predator hunting classes. If you want to get involved with those, they've got some other things coming up, some other events. Find them online, notjustguns.com. And if you ever get in there, great store full of great people and lots of stuff that you know, it's not just guns. Back with Mark Martin, pro angler and educator of the hard water fishing variety here, joining us here on Wild Michigan. Mark, you are heading currently up to Mullet Lake. And, you know, look, that let's call what this is, too. This is a very big body of water that gets very deep in some places. And you guys are going to be like some of the first people really getting out there in earnest to put other people on, you know, the school out there.
Right, Greg, we will be, you know, and we like it that way, you know, but that's why we get up there like today and start scoping it out, find if there are any bad spots, we're going to find them and not let our students anywhere near them, and we're going to find where the fish are and get the people on fish as soon as we can so that they can practice the techniques that we're teaching them and have all their poles ready and set up by Sunday so on Monday they can go on the attack mode and we can implement them on the best spots there are in the safest spots. So that's why we leave early and we got a good handle on everything from there.
You know, it's there's so much that goes into running these schools. You've got a nice group of pro staff with you, and you know you're showing them what you use, what you've learned, and it's kind of cool because you really eliminate a lot of almost all of the guesswork when it comes to ice fishing.
Oh, yeah, there is no guesswork. And if you listen to us and you set up everything the way we ask of you and do it, even though you think it's the stupidest thing you ever heard. And, yeah, that's the truth. You know, even my pro staff, you know, when they first came aboard, they were good fishermen, but they're way better than they were. They even, you know, scrutinized some of the things I was teaching. But they did it, without argument. And now they realize that they're catching more fish and they're able to teach their friends how to catch more fish. Like, let's just put this out there. Doing the details is, everybody thinks it's a magic lure we're using. It's the devil's in the details. It's all the little things put together, right? It's a recipe. If you do the recipe right, you're on your way to being successful. And this, I'll tell you one specific thing that would curl everybody's eyelids back is, we tell them to take their tip up and put 6-pound test fluorocarbon on the end of it with a little teeny ball bearing swivel between the Dacron and the 6-pound test fluorocarbon, and then a couple little split shots on the fluorocarbon just to keep the minnow in a 14 treble hook. You know the size of a 14 treble? You almost got to have a magnifying glass.
Right. I was going to say, that's kind of small.
Right. But then when you even put a little perch minnow on there and put it down there, that perch minnow can swim around because of the wispy line and a little teeny lightweight hook. They don't even know anything's in them. You know, they're swimming all over and they're and the fish can't see it. And they can't, and when they get it in their mouth, they can't feel that little hook. So they take it down and then people go, oh, what about the, you know, predator's teeth? I'm going, well, you know, that little thin line fits right between their teeth, and as long as you don't sit there and pull like you got a 25-pound leader on the thing,
right,
you're going to land every fish. So if you feel it tugging or swatting its head back and forth, you just drop the line and let it go down the hole. And it may take a 45 minutes to land a 40-inch northern pike or a 8-pound walleye or whatever, but you're going to land them because they get sick and tired of you letting them fight all the time, and they just finally turn belly up and come up under the hole.
You know, Mark, that's really
out of here.
That's really a great method and a great way to explain that about how important finesse is with ice fishing. Look, we had a guy on, Rodney Akey was a guy that pulled a state record flathead catfish through the ice on a Walmart pole, okay? It took him a while, but he did it. You know, Rodney has since passed. The record has since been beat. But it was one of those things. You know, it was about finesse. It was about patience,
yep.
And
right.
That's what these things all start with.
Right. Exactly. Well, you want to know a cool thing? When I was doing my seminars at Novi, here just a bit back, this young kid, which I realized who he was. He was at my school last year, and he was a convert. You know, and his dad and his brother were with him. He go, Mark, you got to see what I caught after I left your school and I took your methods and went on our home lake. He whipped out a picture on his phone
that just about dropped my jaw onto the thing. It was a 26-pound northern pike, 46 inches long. And it was something, I don't even know if I ever caught one that big. And he got it on 6 pounds and 14. He said it works like all of his friends and the rest of their family were laughing at all those guys. Guess what? He said they're all using 6 pound test and number 14 hooks after that. we were catching fish. You know, they that was just the biggest fish, but they said we caught way more fish than the rest of them with 25-pound leaders, they said, and gargantuan treble hooks.
You know, speaking with Mark Martin here on Wild Michigan, markmartins.net is his website. Mark has been educating people for so long and helping people achieve the success that he has achieved through trial and error throughout this whole time. And Mark, what I love about, you know, like you and guys like Lance Valentine, all these other educators in the outdoors, is not once has you need to use this lure with this color and this. It's not like that. You know what I mean? It's about getting there, because all that other stuff will come with what, you know, what you're teaching.
Right. It's all putting it together right. Every little detail, you know, somebody will come into my class and go, oh, I can't hardly snap that little snap. Well, if you got to have a bigger one on there, it's going to change the action of that lure. And now you're not going to do as good. Yeah, you can put a different one on, but don't expect to do as best as you can do. And if you don't like the size of that swivel I have you putting on, because you can't hardly see that to tie it on, well, and you put a bigger one on, it's going to be that much harder for you to detect, you know, a bite and make everything sink at the right speed, too.
Mark Martin, our guest here. Mark, I'm going to ask you this question, and I've asked other people this before, but how much, just roughly percentage-wise, are color schemes on tackle for us as is the fish?
Well, you know, I'm going to say one, you know, what I have learned over my 60-some years of fishing and 42 years of making a living at it and 32 years at doing teaching open-end ice fishing is the one real common denominator of colors that you should always have some, whether it's a whole bunch of it or just a little teeny bit of it, is glow in the dark. On every, if you can get it on every lure, even if you got to put a little dot here or there, you're adding to going higher on your abilities and how many fish you're going to catch that day or that evening or whatever, you know, I mean. And now the salmon guys, I mean, they got those big old bright lures in there. They got to keep charging them up. Well, you know, you don't have to have that much glow in the dark to catch the other predator fish through the ice. But if you got just enough on there that it catches their attention, they just come over and swat it down and you got a nice fish or a fish, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, especially with walleye who are so light sensitive in darker waters, you know, whether it's stained water or just snow covered ice, it's movement, it's visibility that's going to trigger them, because that's what they do most is reactionary biting.
Yeah, it's not, they don't, you know, a lot of times, you know, they may hear it because you've been bouncing the bottom, what you're supposed to do, you know, and then they got a good, you know, idea where it is, and when they come in and they just catch that little glimpse, having that little teeny bit of glow on there, pinpoints it for them, and then they quit thinking and they just go into attack mode and pin it to the bottom or grab it, you know.
And that's perfect, man. That's a great piece of advice to wind up this chat with Mark Martin. Dude, again, markmartins.net is his website, and maybe you can get in on one of his fishing vacation schools. He's headed up to Mullet Lake right now. Mark, dude, safe travels and good fishing. We know you're going to make a bunch of people happy this weekend.
Well, thank you. I just want to say, if I can, I have an opening left at Saginaw Bay right now. I got a opening, maybe two, but for sure one. I just had a cancellation this morning. So I just wanted to throw it out there for somebody that wants to learn the tricks of the trade. There's an opening.
All right. Mark Martin, appreciate you joining us here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Thanks to our friends at Not Just Guns, Conquest Sense, and the United Deer Farmers of Michigan. More coming your way, whole nother hour on the Michigan Talk Network.